KNWN Seattle, KNWN FM Oakville, and KPLZ HD2 Seattle, your information station.
Good evening, I'm Frank Lindsay. Along with Jeff Pogula, Northwest News Time is 6:02. This afternoon's shooting of former President Donald Trump is what we are bringing you continuing coverage of tonight. It is being called an assassination attempt, and the former president has released a statement that, again, reads in part that a bullet pierced his upper right ear. The former president says he could feel it ripping through skin of his right ear. There was a lot of bleeding, he says. Video from that scene in Butler, Pennsylvania earlier today shows a body on the roof of a building about 400 feet away from where the former president was speaking at that campaign rally. Law enforcement officials say the gunman, as well as a person attending the rally, are both dead. Jeff spoke with some folks earlier this afternoon at Seattle Center right after this all happened.
What were your first thoughts?
Shocking. And then at the same time, sort of like, that it might have happened sooner, you know, with the political challenges today, you know, between the far right and far left.
And we're also hearing from Washington State Representative Jim Walsh, who is also the Republican Party chair. He's in Milwaukee tonight getting ready for the Republican National Convention, which is scheduled to start on Monday. He expects security there to be tightened even further.
Security was already high. The area around the Fiserv Arena, the sports arena where the bulk of the convention activities will take place, has already been restricted. It's been gated. The roads around it, the service streets closest to it, are all closed and to most traffic. So there's already a security perimeter up around the site. I imagine in the next 24 to 48 hours, that perimeter will be solidified even more.
Now, Jeff, this obviously is going to change things, not only for the RNC on Monday, but for the presidential race itself. What are you hearing in that regard from local political strategists?
Well, we spoke with Republican political strategist Randy Peppel, and still there's a lot we don't know about what led to this. But Peppel says one thing is clear, the heightened political rhetoric is to blame.
One would hope that this event shocks some people back to reality. And that would start with obviously those that are commenting on this type of behavior. But even more than that, those who are raising that rhetoric level, and that goes to all the way up to former President Trump. This should cause him pause about the use of violent language.
Again, he's saying that everyone across the political spectrum should condemn this kind of violence. He adds that people are acting on this type of rhetoric.
They act on it on the left. They act on it on the right. We've seen it on our college campuses. Now we're seeing it at political rallies. And there's no place for it in American society. And those who want to lead our country should be leading the rhetorical charge against that type of violence.
So we'll have to see how this changes, Frank. As you said, the Republican National Convention, which starts on Monday, obviously security is going to be even tighter. There's going to be a lot of mentions of this in the various speeches, and then how it changes the campaign going forward.
And it'll be interesting to see if the rhetoric is ratcheted up or down, is potentially at the convention. That was another point that Jim Walsh made when I spoke with him earlier. Same thing that Randy said, is that this kind of thing needs to be ratcheted down, because as it gets higher and higher, these kind of things can happen, unfortunately. And we also are getting some comments from members of the Washington congressional delegation. Pramila Jayapal, the Democrat: United States is a democracy. Political violence of any kind is completely unacceptable, and I am horrified by the events in Pennsylvania today. Senator Patty Murray says, quote, violence is never acceptable. I don't care what your political beliefs are. We use our voices and our votes in a democracy. Violence has no place in America.
And unfortunately, America has a long history of this. Gabby Giffords was shot and nearly killed at a rally several years ago with her constituents. We saw the assassination attempt on Ronald Reagan back in the 1980s. So the rhetoric certainly has ratcheted up in the Trump years, but political violence is nothing new to the United States, unfortunately.
And we were speaking earlier about the security that is already in place there and likely to be increased. You're going to be covering the convention. You're headed to Milwaukee tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You're going to be headed to Chicago in August to cover the Democrats. And you had to go through, just to get credentialed, background checks and all kinds of steps needed to be taken before they gave you the green light to come out and cover it.
Absolutely. The Secret Service has to check everyone who is coming inside the perimeter. And for those who have not been around a national political convention before, it would be like all of downtown Seattle being shut down for a week, and only those who have been cleared by the Secret Service allowed in over probably a 10-block radius is about how big these areas are that are shut down. In Milwaukee, the river is nearby. The Milwaukee River is nearby. There's a no boating area. There's no fly zones overhead. Security is extraordinarily tight already. And then now, just 2 days before the convention, you have what was being called an assassination attempt on the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. It's the security is going to get even tighter.
It's going to be a very tense situation, the understatement there, but it's going to be interesting to see how this, again, affects how the conventions play out, how the rest of the political race for the White House plays out in the next few months. Let's go back now to ABC News as we continue our coverage. Again, President Trump, former President Trump, gunfire at one of his rallies today in Pennsylvania. The former president says he was hit with a bullet that pierced part of his right ear, but otherwise the Secret Service and his campaign says he is fine, but still hurt this afternoon at that rally in Pennsylvania. We take you back now live to ABC News.
Vice presidential contenders, running mates with the former president.
News Radio 97.7 FM and AM 1000. Live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Here's Jeff Pogula.
Well, the Republican Party has officially adopted their ticket, but it wasn't without a few hiccups.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now my honor to introduce the Attorney General. And there goes the teleprompter.
That's Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, who quickly rushed off stage when that happened. The House band played for more than 45 minutes while technicians worked to fix the problem. But once they did,
I formally declare President Donald J. Trump and J.D. Vance as the Republican nominees for President and Vice President of the United States.
And Bill Brooks, Skagit County GOP chair and Washington State delegate to the convention, is thrilled.
I think it's fantastic. He was my first pick. He's extremely tough, very smart guy. We're very happy with J.D. Vance. Great pick.
Vance will speak later in the convention, but later tonight, Donald Trump is expected to make his first public remarks since the assassination attempt on Saturday. I'm Jeff Pogula at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Now with more of today's news, here's Kim Shepard.
And the attempted assassination of the former president was greeted with unanimous condemnation.
The Northwest's only all-news station, News Radio 97.7 FM and AM 1000, where the news watch never stops.
And thanks for joining us. I'm Kim Shepard, Eric Heintz at the editor's desk. And over in Milwaukee, we've got Jeff Pogula at the Republican National Convention with the big VP pick today. Jeff, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. J.D. Vance is that big VP pick. He was one of the three finalists that Donald Trump had talked about over the last couple of weeks. It was between him, Doug Burgum, governor of North Dakota, and Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. And so then by process of elimination, I guess, he picked on J.D. Vance. He's a 39-year-old senator, relatively young, has only been in the Senate for a year and a half. Of course, he is a former military officer. He has written a best-selling book, but he is a darling of the right, a darling of the GOP, once a Trump critic, but now a Trump fan, and certainly his pick for vice president and running mate. We're expecting to hear from him a little bit later on, but I'm guessing later tonight when Donald Trump takes the stage here in Milwaukee, he's going to be speaking about his choice for vice president.
Right, and I heard Donald Trump's son talking about his choice, seeming very happy with it. What else are you hearing in response to that?
Well, not all of the delegates are sold. I spoke with the delegates here in from Washington State, which is actually their just below me, directly below my broadcast location. And most of them were just absolutely thrilled to have J.D. Vance on the ticket. But others that are here aren't so happy about it. They have concerns about his experience or lack thereof. They like the idea of having someone younger on the ticket, particularly since Donald Trump is no spring chicken. He's in his later 70s. So to have someone who's 39 years old as the VP, that kind of balances that out. But the other concern among some of the delegates here is, what does J.D. Vance get you that you don't already have? If you're thinking in terms of political strategy, Vance comes from Ohio. Ohio went for Donald Trump in both 2016 and 2020. so he doesn't really bring over a swing state. He doesn't bring in a constituency that isn't already in Trump's column. So we'll have to see how the rest of the campaign plays out. But mixed feelings, but for the most part, overwhelmingly positive for J.D. Vance.
Now, what do you know about him personally? Because I understand he's considered somewhat of a political outsider.
A little bit. He wrote that best-selling book, Hillbilly Elegy, that was his sort of claim to fame that really shot him to stardom. And then, you know, he ran for Senate, became a darling of the GOP, as I said. But back in the day, early on, was a critic of Donald Trump, but then converted to the MAGA movement and is now a big fan of his. One of the other concerns that I heard some of the delegates say was that he would not provide a check on some of the more extreme impulses that Donald Trump seems to have sometimes, and they needed someone who wouldn't just be a yes man. So, but it all remains to be seen how J.D. Vance plays his role as both running mate and vice president should they be elected.
We've had as fractured a Republican Party as we've had a fractured America, and it is great to see so many different establishment Republicans come together with new Republicans in behind a president that we all 100% support. And that just feels good. It's nice to come to a place where there's finally unity in our party, and it's happening right here in Milwaukee.
Seems like there are still some. I mean, we're talking pre the events of Saturday.
Sure.
There's still the Trump wing. There's still the more traditional wing of the Republican Party. Before you can bridge America, you got to bridge the gaps within your own family, right? So how do you do that?
Well, you start with events like this. You start with candidates like Donald Trump, who wants to open up the tent as large as he can make it. And think about it, that's hard to do. We have people that are at this convention that have, this is their 12th convention. They've been coming for 50 years. So when they became delegates or when they were original Republicans, think about how different the issues were in America. We're a whole different country right now with a whole different setup and a whole different thing we got to worry about. And the last thing that somebody who's been coming to this thing for 50 years wants to do is to change anything. You know, let's just keep everything the way that it is. And that can't happen. We have to evolve, and the Republicans are evolving. So you take new concepts and new leadership and new ideas, and you have to run them by the establishment, because you can't get rid of those people. You can't say you don't count anymore. In fact, they're our forefathers. We have to respect them. We've got to edify them, and we have to make sure that we are true to their ideas. But it's the way we do it. It's the mechanics that are being used. We did it through a platform. I'm on the platform committee, so I've been here a whole week before the convention started. And there was a lot of talk about how we took a 100-page platform and turned it into a 15-page platform. We did that very strategically. And as a person in the news, you know how hard it is to take a 1,200-word piece and turn it into a 300-word piece. It's really difficult. The president worked hard, his advisors worked hard, and we as a platform committee worked hard to do exactly that. And now we have a document where I can give it to you and you can actually read it. You can actually understand what we stand for as a party. Did we take language out that some people wanted to have in, especially on some of the issues that are very dear to their hearts? Yes, that's what happens when you condense a document. But the spirit of the document has been, I think, the strongest, most to the point and direct manifestation of what we believe in as conservative Republicans, and that is a great thing to have. I can give you that document. You can read it. I don't have to tell you what we stand for. You can find out yourself.
You mentioned some of the changes, the two most prominent being the removal of opposition to gay marriage.
Sure.
And the removal of pushing a nationwide abortion ban. Are you saying the Republican Party is moving away from those issues?
No, in fact, we're moving closer to them. And let me explain how that works. The Supreme Court gave states the right to outright ban abortion. The 14th Amendment allows states now, through the rescission of Roe v. Wade, they have the right to pass those laws if they want to. And really and truly, abortion, for instance, is an issue that should not be mandated from the top down. It should always be grown from the bottom up. It's an organic issue. And you're not going to say you believe the way I believe unless you feel it in your heart. And so we have to change hearts and minds. And now we have the authority and the ability to do that on a state-by-state basis. And as you know, it's happening. In Washington, we've got our work cut out for us. It's going to be a long time because a lot of people don't believe that we should ban abortion in the state of Washington. Do we do that legislatively through some Washington, D.C. thing? No. We do that at a state level where we grow the hearts and minds of people who believe that we should change the laws on abortions. And we might not in the state of Washington. That may not be the will of the people.
And you'd be okay with that?
I'm not okay with it. I'll fight like hell to make sure that doesn't happen. I'm not okay with it at all. But if that's where I live and that's the state and that's the law that I live in, then I have to abide by that. It's the will of the people where we are. What I hope to do is to use the platform and the unification of this convention to change hearts and minds about the issue like abortion and all the other issues that are in our platform.
News Radio 97.7 FM and AM 1000, live from the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. Here's Jeff Pogula.
Hello from Wisconsin. I'm Northwest News Radio's Jeff Pogula. This past week has left an indelible mark on American history. Last Saturday in Butler, Pennsylvania, an attack on American democracy as an assassin came within an inch of killing former President Donald Trump. The bullet pierced his right ear, and within seconds, the Secret Service was on hand and had surrounded Mr. Trump. The alleged shooter was shot dead. Then, in an image that could become as iconic as the flag raising at Iwo Jima, Donald Trump was escorted off stage with blood trickling down his face, fist pumping in the air, and the American flag waving in the background. And whatever you may think of the man, his policies, or even his rhetoric, the fact remains that he was and is the presidential nominee of a major political party. Now, just 5 days later, he is set to deliver his acceptance speech here at the Republican National Convention. And I want to bring in Jim Walsh, chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, who has been here all week working with the state delegation. And Jim, tonight's address will be the first public remarks from the former president since that attack. What do you think we're going to hear?
Well, Jeff, I think what we're going to hear from Trump is not the usual personality, although he can't resist some of his personality. I think he's going to talk about issues. The theme at the convention so far this week, each of the days has focused on a specific set of policies that fit within the broad framework of his tagline, Make America Great Again. But he's talked about restoring economic stability, getting rid of inflation. He's talked about really enforcing immigration law again. He's talked about supporting law enforcement generally. And you can hear in the background, the wrestler Hulk Hogan is warming the audience up for the president.
Yeah, who would have thought Hulk Hogan, and not only that, for those who are listening instead of watching, he is in character as the wrestler. He ripped off his shirt to unveil a Trump for President shirt, red shirt on underneath. So it is quite the show. But this isn't the first appearance of Mr. Trump at this convention. If you look at what happened on Monday night, he made a surprise appearance, didn't come out on stage, but came out onto the delegate floor and then walked up into the VIP booth. And it was a different Donald Trump than what we've seen for the past 40, 50 years. He was emotional. He got teary-eyed at times when some of the speakers were on stage. It appeared that the assassination attempt really kind of moved him. And we saw emotions from the former president that we have never seen before. And whatever you may think of the partisanship of the man, it was really kind of an American moment there.
Very much so. As you mentioned, he hasn't been on the stage, but he has a kind of VIP booth set aside for him and a kind of rotating set of guests who sit next to him. And what you said is very true. While physically he seems well, the bullet kind of grazed the side of his head. It seems to have pierced his ear, the upper part of his ear. But physically he seems well. I think the drain of that assassin's attack and ultimately failed attack, it looks like it was more emotional, maybe more psychological.
Does that surprise you?
No, not at all. I have known other public officials who've been involved in situations where they've been confronted with violence, and they've told me before that the violence isn't as devastating as the kind of emotional impact that you carry with you in the days afterward.
Former President Donald Trump giving his acceptance speech here at the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee. You are listening to KNWN Seattle, KNWN FM Oakville, KPLZ HD2 Seattle, KPLZ HD3 Seattle, and KVI Seattle. I'm Jeff Pogela from Northwest News Radio, joined by Jim Walsh, chairman of the Washington State Republican Party, who is up here with us in the broadcast booth as Melania now walks on stage to share a hug and a kiss with her husband. But, Jim, it was beyond Clinton-esque in its length. The former president spoke for, by my count, an hour and 33 minutes. His 2016 acceptance speech was an hour and 16 minutes, which at that time was the longest acceptance speech in 40 years.
It was long. It was typical of Trump. He followed the teleprompter script sometimes and then riffed for long periods. I think part of what he was trying to show is that he is full of vim and zip and not at all quieted by the assassination attempt last weekend, and he certainly did that.
And here come the balloons in the traditional red, white, and blue falling down from the rafters of Fiserv Forum here in downtown Milwaukee. The Trump family on stage, the former president in a black suit, white shirt, and his signature red power tie, waving to the crowd, shaking the hands of some of his family members and supporters. But taking a look at what he said, what struck me is that he started, for the first 20-25 minutes, he spoke about the assassination attempt on Saturday and how he experienced it and his view of things. It was a very different Donald Trump than we have seen. And after that, he kind of fell back into the more Trump that we expect.
Yeah, very, very true. When he was speaking about the shooting in Pennsylvania this past weekend, he got a little emotional. He seemed to be on the verge of choking up a bit when he was talking about it. Now, he kept that to the side well enough that he was able to describe from where he was standing what happened and what it felt like. But it was a different tone. And then, yes, after he walked through that step-by-step experience of what he saw on Saturday, then he did revert to the more familiar Trump tone.
And from our vantage point up here in the press galley, we can see the giant, probably at minimum 85-inch flat-screen TV that they use at the back for the teleprompter. And for those who've never seen a teleprompter before, each sentence is in its own block as if a paragraph, and there is a break and a line in between each one. Without fail, whenever there was that break, Donald Trump was riffing.
He very, very much was. When he gets into the more personal anecdotes, the story of what a fellow said to him here or a waitress said to him there, that's not on script. That's Trump riffing. And while we're talking about those riffs, his little anecdote about how he got the idea of the no tax on tips tax reform from a waitress that he was talking to in a restaurant was one of the more effective moments where he was riffing.
And it was certainly a theme that the Republican Party and the Republican National Committee have been pushing this week during the Republican National Convention. We heard a number of other speakers over the last few days bring out that policy point. But Donald Trump spent a lot of time talking about what he would do differently towards the end of the speech. And a lot of it sounded very similar to what he wanted to do in 2016.
He did. I would say that he did make more of an effort to seem open and accommodating. He talked at moments about opening a hand of friendship, offering a hand of friendship to all people. And I think he meant it. I think that assassination attempt that he survived on Saturday, I think it has changed him a bit. There were moments during this long speech where he seemed more reflective and, as we've said, more emotional than he usually is.
And you have another singer on stage. From my vantage point, I can't tell who it is. As the balloons continue to drop. But we were talking about the prompter and the text of the speech versus Donald Trump's riffing. And it really kind of struck me that the text, if you're reading it from as we could as the speech was going on, was a very different speech and tone than what the former president delivered. It almost seemed like the text was trying to bring him back to sound more presidential when he tries to go off script.
It did. It did. It covered basically the policy points you and I discussed at the opening. It covered immigration pointedly. It covered a general support for law enforcement and more effective crime fighting in the country. It covered extensively economic reforms, including tax reforms, including regulatory reforms. So the scripted part of the speech was certainly full of substance on policy. The riffs tended to go off a little bit into the more personal, his experiences when he was president during his first term and his experiences now that he's been in out of office for a few years.
They also tended to be going back to his litany of complaints, his grievances. One of the things that I did notice about all the speakers and the events here in Milwaukee over the last couple of days is the talk of the 2020 election being stolen. It was there, but it was very toned down. And you could tell he wanted to go there. He wanted to say that.
Yes, he did. And he touched on it at two or three different points during the speech. A little muted. I think he knows that, by and large, voters are not keen on hearing those stories. And even voters who have issues with election integrity, they don't like relitigating old elections. They're more forward-looking. They want to talk about how to fix elections going forward. And he runs a risk by talking too much about 2020 of being backward-looking. And you could tell he wanted to scratch that itch, and he did it a little bit, but then he reined himself back in from going on and on about it.
And as we kind of wrap up here, the policy points, very much red meat for conservatives, some more traditional moderate positions as well. But if he's elected, a lot of what he wants to do, and this is no different than any other presidential candidate, will be very difficult for him to get done because there's a Congress. There is a judicial system. There's separation of powers. He's not a dictator, as some might say he is, and he on occasion has said he wants to be.
Oh, he was being facetious when he said that.
He was.
But yes. He made several promises of things he would do on the first day, some of them having to do with immigration enforcement, some of them having to do with a general crime fighting in support of law enforcement. He did ask at several points during the speech for a better grasp on Congress and the U.S. Senate, which he will certainly need to implement quick policy changes. But I would say, by and large, the policy points were as we expected, and the anecdotes, the personal stories, were about as we should expect in a Donald Trump convention speech.
So now the ball is in the Democrats' court, as their convention will be held just 90 minutes south in Chicago. Come 3-4 weeks from now, we will be there for complete coverage as well. But as the 2024 Republican National Convention comes to a close, I'd like to thank our team for making this coverage possible. Back in the studio, our producer is Eric Heintz. Kim Shepard has been anchoring the news and running the technical direction. Additional help from Taylor Van Sice, Manufacturer, and Brian Calvert, overseeing all our coverage, is Program and News Director Frank Lindsay. The KBI team includes Mike Sievert and Phil Vandervoort. Mark Christopher and management by Kevin Dodrell. Our team here in Milwaukee includes Ari Hoffman, John Carlson, and producer Zach Wildfang, without whom none of this could happen. And, of course, a thank you to Washington State Republican Party Chairman Jim Walz for joining our coverage tonight. We will see you next month for the Democratic National Convention, which could be the first contested convention in decades if President Biden decides to step aside. Complete coverage on both stations, Talk Radio 570 KVI and Northwest News Radio, 1000 AM, 97.7 FM, and 101.5 HD2. I'm Jeff Pogula. Thank you for listening. Good night from Milwaukee.